From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your Construction Technology News of the Week. Join us with our guest of the week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction.
All right, Ariel, we're into 2025, only a short time, but what do you got for me this week? What's got you checking out, making those clicks and learning new things?
You know, I'm laughing because I'm going to bring it up so that we can keep the, you know, the AI streak. But EarthChem is deploying visual AI that tracks materials and safety. So now EarthChem is available for tracking delivery and installation data, which makes it all the way through to different construction management platforms like Procore and Autodesk. And as you know, there's a lot of advancement when it comes to visual intelligence. And now, if you have a construction job site monitoring your projects, regardless of how many you have installed, especially if it's like a network of cameras, the AI can start looking into what's available on site when it comes to an active monitoring the materials that you have there, and then also the installation, which is, I think, is pretty sweet. Also, on the safety side, it's going to be able to track and monitor PPE. So if somebody's not wearing a helmet or if they're missing gloves for specific tasks, it's going to put out a notice and you'll be notified, which then can be turned into an issue for a further investigation, which I think, you know, it's great. And it's also a way to keep the jobs safer. What do you think about that, Jeff?
I recently talked to some project team members at Commodore Builders. They told me about their assistant superintendent spending an entire week copying from spec books into spreadsheets while their PM would lose sleep over missing something in his contracts. Does that sound familiar? Well, then they got Document Crunch. With Document Crunch's Crunch AI, they were automatically able to create project playbooks for kickoff. They were chatting with their project documents to quickly get reliable answers to questions. That superintendent isn't spending a week in her spec book, and the PM, he has the confidence of getting it right every time. And best of all, you can now find Document Crunch within Procore, right where so many of you already work. Check out this video at documentcrunch.com/contactcrew and sign up for a demo while you're there. You'll thank me for it.
So this is what's great. I know you had to bring in AI, right? They got to talk about it, but this is AI is such a vast conversation, right? And much of AI right now is pretty mature, right? There's a lot of different areas, computer vision being one of them, right? It is matured consistently over time, I believe is out of the hype phase by far now and into other ones. And what's cool about EarthChem is they've been around for a long time, right? And they were a very valuable use case very early on for security, for, you know, sort of progress tracking in this sense of an owner could get in and just see that something was being built well before, you know, we're talking about true, like, you know, actual, you know, amount of work done, but they could see a building going up and that just made them feel a little bit better. And then they got into sort of the access control side of things and monitoring that. And, you know, we had seen other things come along over time that, you know, we're using computer vision for other things. So it's cool to see them involve it in safety, material tracking. You know, I love the idea of EarthChem's already looking at all this stuff, already capturing a lot of it. How many times is a laydown area changed because of an access issue? Now I see the material laid down, but it can also tell me where it was laid down. So I don't send a person or a crew to the wrong place. Like, hey, yesterday laydown was here. Today we had to move it over here. And I send a crew to the wrong place. Like, that's waste. And, you know, we've been talking about this the whole time with Angel about, you know, planning properly and, you know, but the best laid plans go wrong at times. It's great to have a system out in the field that can let us know, or we've talked about this in safety, you know, an interruption of your day-to-day activity. It's really easy to get into a routine. And once you're in a routine on something as complicated as a construction job, say, you are at risk.
And, you know, you have constant eyes on the job site. You know, you can have an amazing safety manager, but he's not looking at what's happening all the time, right? So if there's like a high violation, the cameras can capture that. And when we go into the materials, well, you know, things like providing a picture for material deliveries. That's great. You know, it's just typical things that you may add to a daily report. And again, you don't have to manually do that anymore. You can leverage the system to do that for you. Angel, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, I think it's super exciting. Like Jeff was saying, and you just did, when you have the system that's watching everything, it can do more work than a human can, right? Like, you'd need a lot of eyeballs to get the same coverage that you get with EarthCam. And now it's about augmenting it with these tools like AI. And this is something I've also been thinking about generally, is the companies that have built platforms that the industry loves, really well positioned to add AI to just give their customers more with what they're already capturing. I think there's a bit of paralysis with like how many apps and vendors there are out there. And I definitely am very much against, like, there's no silver bullet. There's no one app that does it all. But I do think if you have a platform, adding things like this, you know, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I love the idea there, Angel, of value add. Something I'm gonna get on my little interesting, just because, you know, I've got this planning from thinking about Angel and VR and the way you do things. And can you imagine, I'll go again, I'm going to get to the Charlie Dunn one again, where, you know, his whole thing is, you know, you want to use these tools to go into the future, find the problems, come back to today, use your Doctor Strange watch to change things around and predict the future. Well, we can do that, you know, in what you're talking about with what you have, Angel, with Resolve. But imagine then we can take EarthCam and what it's capturing, and with its intelligence of knowing where people worked and walked through a job site and how we created access in those job sites. We all know that's what we're just really bad at as humans, right? Is like thinking up the different possibilities. What if we could ingest that into another platform and go through the time of building and optimize the way we deliver materials, position people, lay work down, do that kind of stuff. Everything from, I was just looking at it, Ariel, and it has the porta potties listed. What if we knew that, right? This was way back when James Benham and I started doing this. We had a person who was doing studies on bathroom breaks. He said, I don't care how many times you have to go to the bathroom, I care how far you have to walk. When do we move them? When do we move a material pile? When do we move a pick location? This is cool, man. And I'm with you. Platforms, platform, platform. We need the startup apps. We need the very vertical, very deliberate. Eventually, they need to be part and parcel to a bigger platform, if and when it makes sense. Not everything should go that way, but a lot of things should. So, Ariel, I love it, man. I love the start here. What do you got? What else you got for us?
All right. The other one, this is not like news, but it's something to kind of like inform our industry. And, you know, one of the things that I want to work on this year is making sure that there's more support for not only the industry side of it, but also the academia. And as you know, academia it's where some things get started. It's the research side. So I run into this platform that is called Compec, and they recently launched. And this is, Compec stands for Connecting Professors and Construction Professionals to Enhance Student Development. And this tool is being developed, or this platform is being developed by PhD candidate Anthony Yusuf, with the goal of connecting this real world experience with people that are actually doing the research. And, you know, it's as simple as logging in, and let's say like an instructor can sign up and they can get access to a diverse pool of practitioners that they can serve as a speaker, as a facilitator for like a site visit, or they could be mentors, they could provide seminars, workshops, you name it. Now, guess what's missing from the platform?
What's missing from the platform? Practitioners.
There you go. So there's no practitioners. They're looking for that. And I think this is, you know, a way to put it out there. If you really believe in supporting research and academia and students in general, you know, like even all the way down to a bachelor's, well, think about how you could support showing a case study and putting it out there. So that's what I have for you, Jeff. What do you think about that initiative?
Oh, man, this is so key, because we've said over and over that we need this connection and areas to research when it comes to academia and really connecting how we build and how we're changing with, you know, what's really working. And too much of what happens in school is behind the times too far, especially in construction. When we see it, construction management and other areas, it's just way too far behind. And we've talked about this ad nauseum, right? We have a labor shortage. We are never going to fill that labor shortage gap with people. But what we can do is create smarter, more inventive researchers and opportunities. Who better to take big risks, Ariel, than students who are learning? A lot of them build tiny home projects. A lot of them do, you know, compete at the national level for, you know, MCAA has one, SMACNA has one, I think AGC has one, ABC has them, where they, these are students that compete and get to kind of pitch their ideas. And this is where they can say the most outlandish things. And some of it's going to land in there. But we need it grounded in reality. So I love this, man. I think this is awesome to see. You know, Angel, I'm interested, you know, you got your cut your teeth in learning some of this process through your robotics research and then your experience in school. What's your thought about connecting academia and the world of the practitioners in construction?
I think it's a must. Like you said, when I was in high school during first robotics, I knew that I was into math and science, but really like seeing how that manifests and like building robots and getting them out there and how it all connects was super awesome. Same thing. And, you know, once I was in college, I think a lot of programs, whether it's mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, it stays pretty theoretical and it kind of puts the onus on the student to like go out and do stuff. I already had that motivation from doing first robotics. So I sought out a lot of projects to get my hands dirty, but like senior year, especially I saw it where we had like a capstone project and most of my peers were using CNCs and bandsaws for the very first time. And I'd been doing it for like 8 years at that point. And I was just like, guys, come on. It's not rocket science. You've studied literal rocket science. You should be able to manufacture stuff. And I think just like connecting those dots is so important. I think my fiance is also, she has an academic background in the bio space, but you know, she was a researcher, PhD, then postdoc, and now she's in industry. And we have a lot of conversations about like that gap between when you're in the private sector, like how much more you're applying the stuff, whereas when you're in academia, there's also different incentives, right? It's all about like getting funding. That's very different than let's solve real problems that exist in the world.
Yeah, that's cool too. We've seen this in the electrical world with them partnering with community colleges to provide a lot of the tools, a lot of the real machinery. I love to see, you know, schools with CNC machines, schools with true automotive programs, like anything where people get their hands on and start working. Because you're right, Angel, one of the other things we talked about this early in the, if you didn't listen in the last episode, was like part of learning something is just feeling, you know, a little bit stupid, a little bit new. What a better time to do it? That's where you're supposed to be. That's why it's supposed to, a classroom is supposed to be a safe space to learn and ask questions and be wrong and work with that equipment. But if you're not working with the equipment there before you get into the field, then you got to have that learn. We got to do this. We got to fix that. So love it, Ariel. I think that is awesome, man. Thanks for bringing it to us. If you guys want, check out Ariel. He put a nice post out on this and it's got a link to everything. So you guys can get to that, but we'll make sure to share it as well. So if you don't, if you're not connected with Ariel, by the way, you're silly. You need to connect with Ariel online. Get with him on LinkedIn. He's always posting great stuff. And we'll
show me what you got, Jeff. Show me what you got. I know you have some good news too.
Mine's a little interesting, right? I am going to start with something very nerdy in my world that I get to be wrong as well. And so I picked one that I agree with this author. I was wrong about net neutrality. Rest in peace. And that's probably good news. If you guys don't know, a long time ago, net neutrality was out there. There was this feeling that we needed to kind of treat the internet like any other kind of public service, like electricity, like water, like other things. And that, you know, everybody, there was throttling of different sites. We were all worried about, you know, maybe a couple of the big ones controlling access to all of the information. And so there was this idea behind net neutrality. And honestly, it was shot down in the original Trump administration. And a lot of us thought, uh-oh, this could be really, really bad, of a decline in the, not only the content and quality, but just like how much of it was accessible, how many people would be able to create. I don't think we've seen any of it. And I think what we've realized is, you know, we were wrong. And sometimes we're wrong about these things. I do still think that from an internet perspective, our country, if we want to keep up and we want to continue to educate and raise our entire world, we need to make high-speed internet access not some sort of pay-for-play commodity. It should be table stakes in every area, especially in our lowest income, highest poverty areas, because it creates an access to education and information. And you can say what you want to say. I believe what I believe, but the way out of income inequality, et cetera, is access to education and information. It's the number one way out. But net neutrality was really focusing on, like, could Netflix do what it was doing? Could, you know, certain internet providers, like, I don't want to call any of them out, but you're a cable internet provider and you provide faster speeds to certain areas, you know, certain of your partners. We were all doom and gloom. It didn't happen. It's not happening, right? So now I think we should refocus this on that. So I know it's really nerdy, Ariel. Did you get anything from it, or you just think I'm nuts for thinking about net neutrality and bringing it onto the show?
I would say that the most important thing is, again, making sure that we have access to the internet and therefore information. If, you know, every little thing we can do to support that. And there's a lot of initiatives out there, you know, like soon, you know, there's probably going to be no area in the US or probably in the world that you cannot access the internet thanks to, like, you know, satellites. So let's see how that's going to be changing in the future. And again, like you said, the best way to grow as a person when it comes to income, education, and so on is through the internet. There's a lot of information there. Careful with, you know, misinformation too. But that's the best way to, you know, keep growing.
Angel, any ideas there?
Yeah, it's a fun topic. When I was in college, I briefly went back for a master's that I dropped out of to start a company. But one of the classes I did take was with one of the former CTOs of the FCC. And I mean, the whole semester was basically spent on this at the time. Essentially what you were saying, Jeff, right? Which is, like, is broadband internet, is it a utility? Like everything else, that's the big question. And that's really where, like, the desire to regulate comes from. I get both sides, right? Like, as a startup founder, I don't want to be in a position where now I can't compete with a Meta or an Autodesk because they can pay for better internet. Like you said, it hasn't happened. So I don't think that's as much of a real threat. I don't think we should over-regulate things. On the flip side, you nailed it. These days, the internet, especially with things like ChatGPT and where, like, AI is headed, the internet equals access to knowledge. Like, that is what it is. And that's where we do have to be careful, right? That we don't create a disparity between, okay, these are people who have access to, like, every single bit of knowledge in history around the world, and these people don't because they can't afford it. It is a free market. It regulates itself. That is the thing I would love to protect, is make sure that everyone has access to it, because especially at the rate that AI is accelerating, I mean, you have so much at your fingertips with just an internet connection. At the time when this was, like, a hot argument back in, like, 2012, 2013, there was a really good book by the co-founder of Reddit, Alexis Ohanian, and the title of the book was Without Their Permission. And it was just about how so many startup founders, like, starting a company these days, it's a pretty level playing field in that you just need a laptop and internet and you can start something, right? Like, obviously it's more software. It's harder to build a hardware company because you need access to more capital and facilities. But from a software perspective, that's all you need. And that's where, like, making sure that we have equal access is really important, and that we keep the American dream alive.
I fully agree. I like the utilities. It should be a utility, and at certain levels of speed, it should be a utility. I like your AI idea there, although that's a whole nother episode where we do have access to all the knowledge on the that's ever been placed on the internet, but all of us know that about half the stuff that's on the internet is crap. And so we've got to be careful about what kids are learning. Trust me, I have a 12-year-old, and I had a whole argument the other day about something. And then she asked Siri, and I learned where she quote unquote learned it from. And that led to a whole nother conversation. So my thing is, like, the AI revolution, I'm the one who's out there saying ethics, ethics, ethics. And also, we should be building AI to prevent AI from teaching kids the wrong information, because so much of it exists. But with that being said, if we level that, Angel, you're right. I mean, how many kids now? And to even argue that from a robotics and a hardware perspective, you're right, it's hard. But with virtualization software and gaming engines, they can design robotics and design, you know, sort of prototypes without ever having to build anything. And then they're going to be able to bring that to people. So I just see this whole coolness. And I just wanted to bring up net neutrality, but I love where you brought it, guys. That was kind of fun. And I always have to finish with something a little bit softer, something a little bit more fun. And I love to say that, little shout out to the Construction Brothers, the first of us in construction to say that work-life balance was BS was my boy Tyler Campbell. There is no such thing as work-life balance, right? Because when you think about how we define work-life balance, we think, you know, I have to have a balance every day with this is my work time, this is my family time, this is my play time, my exercise time, whatever. Quite frankly, that's not how it works out, right? It never works out that way. And it's not going to be that we come to work at 10 and leave by 3 and we can still be as productive as we ever could. That's just not how it works. It's that we have to balance. So this is psychologist Adam Grant says your overall success at work comes down to 3 familiar words. And those 3 familiar words are eliminate distractions, focus on the task at hand, and stay present. And then take breaks. Here is something that I think AI is bringing to the forefront is, and we've talked about this on the Construction Dorks, we'll talk about it here a little bit. The rise of AI, the interesting thing is what it is good at is the mundane tasks, the things that we used to kind of spend our felt like we were wasting our time, right? But honestly, you were letting your brain take some time off. You need that time off. You can only stay in flow state for a particular period of time and be effective as someone working with before you hit exhaustion. And what this article talks about is how do you get through that process, come up with something that works for you. So some people will work, you know, an entire day. They'll work 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. because that's the task at hand. But then they need to balance that out with a day off to be with their family, to be with, you know, to do the things that they love, to recharge. So, you know, Ariel, I'm interested because, you know, when Tyler talked about, you know, this work-life balance is a falsity, he was really talking about detailers and, you know, the world he came from, the BIM folks. What are your thoughts on, you know, work-life balance and what does it truly mean? Because I think it's become this like kind of buzzword that's wrong.
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot here because I know it's going to come back at me later. But, you know, I think that there's not a universal definition. I think that everybody can probably fit a definition for work-life balance that fits the way that they think about work and personal life. And, you know, this is coming from somebody that can send you an email at 11 p.m. on Sunday, right? And it's also very tricky because I love what I do. I have this passion for, you know, construction technology and teaching others and training. So some of my time that is, you know, theoretically time off because I'm relaxing and people are like, oh, you should be reading a book. Well, maybe I'm reading a book about construction technology, right? But it's all about how you feel about it, right? That's the way I got it. If you're just working and you're feeling that you're depleting your energy into a specific task, that's when I'm like, okay, try to find and do something that you can replenish your energy. If that has to do with something that somehow it's related to work, I mean, that's fine. I mean, if you are, again, you're depleting your energy and you're getting it back, I think that's the work-life balance, is making sure that you're not drained out all the time. That's what I will say.
Super key. See, I wanted to cover this. I wanted to let you go. And then, you know, I'm a huge flow state fan. And so, Angel, I'm going to let you sit and hear, think about this for a second. And I love this because I listen to Adam Grant a lot. If you don't listen to Adam Grant, please go listen to him and a couple others. But he actually covers the person who studied flow state the most, which is, and I'm going to try and get this right, Mihail Csikszentmihalyi, in which we benefit from peak performance. So, you know, how do you get into flow? And here's an interesting thing is if you can hack the way you get into flow state and you can only do that through repetition, you can actually be far more productive in far less time because you can go from a regular state to flow state, out of flow state and back into it. And one of the tips here is set clear goals. Start by setting clear, achievable goals for what you want to accomplish. When you know what you're aiming for, it's easier to stay focused and engaged. Challenge yourself. Find tasks that are just challenging enough to keep you engaged, but not so difficult that they overwhelm you. Flow happens when you're stretched just to the right amount. So it's all about stretching yourself into flow state and getting done. So Angel, as a founder, I know the balance of work and life, they blend a lot because you're passionate about what you're doing. So what are your thoughts?
I think that's exactly right. Is if you're passionate about what you're doing, like Ariel said, the balance is really about recharging, right? It's a marathon, not a sprint. And so you just want to make sure you can keep going. I've been a founder for the last decade. People ask me all the time, like, are you tired? Are you ready to go work in big tech? Absolutely not. Like I love what I do. I think also I love the people that I get to interact with, you guys, people I'm in the industry. That's what fuels me. And also just gotta like find what works for you. Sometimes on weekends, you know, these days in my role, I get to write less code. I am technical, so I do enjoy writing code. And so sometimes a weekend off for me is just writing some code on a fun random project, experimenting with like weird AI stuff. That, as Ariel said, that recharges my batteries. And as a founder, my job is to make sure my batteries are as close to 100% as possible so that I can keep the team and the growth going. I think also flow state, huge. You have to protect your flow state. For me, early mornings, late nights, and weekends is where I have like more interrupted work time. Weekdays these days, very reactive, a lot of Slack messages, emails, phone calls. That's a very different type of work. And there's a great PG Paul Graham essay on like the maker schedule, which is founders kind of go through this evolution where like early on, it's a lot of experimenting, a lot of writing code, pushing it to customers. Once you have traction, then you have less of that interrupted time because you're hiring people, you're putting out fires, you're talking to customers, you're marketing. There's all this stuff you have to do that you have to be really deliberate about kind of reclaiming that maker time where you can sit, zoom out, think about the company, think about the future, and then make sure you're relaying that to your team.
Love it. Love it because you nailed it. And what I want to do to bring it back to construction and, you know, shamelessly plug, because that's what I do here, is, you know, Charlie Dunn and I and Nathan Wood, we do flow state experiences. We do these workshops that are focused around play, etc. But everybody thinks that this is some ethereal thing. The reason we're trying to show you what flow state is and what planning looks like and why good planning is key is because we have a perceived productivity problem in the field. The problem is the productivity doesn't have to do with the people. We keep looking at the people and blaming them. It's not them. It's the planning. It's our ability to put them in a flow state where they don't need to go find materials and ask people questions. They know what it is that they're building. They don't have to do a change order or come across something where they know right away, I'm putting this valve in and nobody can reach it. Nobody can get to it. I'm putting an access panel in and I've got a pipe that's going right in front of it. Like none of that. And that is actually on us, on the technology, on the planning, on the pre-construction, on the BIM side of things. And then also when we get to our people in the field, if you can think about eliminating friction and giving people large swaths of time to get into motion, Have you ever watched people laying brick and block when it's all put in the right place and they can go? It's art. It is poetry in motion. But we fail to realize that that is based on really good planning and being focused. So to me, if we want to solve the productivity problem, we solve the planning problem, we promote planning, and we promote the ability to put people in that state. And all of a sudden, we're going to see a real huge jump in construction productivity. And it's not for all of the reasons that other people think it is. I think that's why it is. And I think we need to use the digital tools to help us get to there. So that's my mic drop for the day.
There's a really good book. It applies to software mostly. It's called The Mythical Man Month, if you haven't read it. And it's about how adding more people to a delayed task doesn't make it go faster, right? Like sometimes it's not headcount that is the limiting thing. It was just, like you said, poor planning. And this is all just about, it's more about like project delivery in the software world, but I think it's all encompassing. And it's what you were saying. It's just getting people to work smarter, not just throwing more humans at the problem. That doesn't always fix things.
It actually, it really doesn't. It never does. Actually, you know, we've been trying this for years, right? When we had the labor pool, you know, we would throw more labor at it and it didn't prove that we got there any faster. In fact, we pretty much got there as slow as we were going to get there, and it cost us twice as much because we had to pay that much more in labor. So I fully agree. I'm big on the How Big Things Get Done book right now. So I'm going to add that one because my off time, I listen to organizational psychology stuff from Adam Grant. I read books, listen to books while I ride my bike. So like you said, it might not be recharging in the way you think it is, but it is to me. So this was awesome. We had a great episode before and a great news with Angel. Angel, thanks so much for sitting down and doing the news with us today. Ariel, always a pleasure, my man. It's good to see you, and we will see you out there soon.
Happy to join you. Yes. You know, as soon as the conference season starts, I know we'll meet somewhere.
Well, I will be starting it. By the time this episode comes out, I'll be about headed to the MEP Innovations. So I hope I see you guys out there in the listener land at MEP Innovations. Come look me up. I'll be there.
Thank you for tuning in today for the Construction Technology News of the Week with Angel Say and Ariel Castillo. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.